Are there any questions? Questions or digestions, things that you've digested or not? I can barely hear you.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay.
No problem.
Okay, what I'd like to know is when we have a pain in our spleen or something, is that when we get this out and think, oh yeah, then I can do this position? Or do we just do it when we just feel led to do it? Or
what do you think?
Do we do each one on a regular basis, or
all goes, all is good.
Of course, if we did all of them, it would be a lot of time.
But we have to breathe out anyway, so. And just breathe out.
But we just do have what we feel. We just. Mm.
And it ends up being a challenge, even though it's a strange challenge. But the challenge is, as with meditation and life, is it possible to get interested in something not because we have a problem? Not because we have a problem. Mm. Also when we have a problem, but not only because we have a problem. Mm. So do I just feel how good it feels when I let my hands be still for a while where they landed? Or is it only because, oh my God, I better do something about this before.
And is it that we, of course, for some, you know, it's initially described left hand, right hand, and then to just switch in the middle, oh, I'm getting tired of this, and it's a little bit uncomfortable, and just moving it, the same thing, only on the opposite side.
Yeah, like reversing. Good. Anything else?
Do you remember this morning when you talked about the gods and goddesses?
Mm-hmm.
Can you say it again? Because it was really beautiful.
I don't know. So in case someone wasn't here in the couple of times that I mentioned that the places that we're putting our hands in Jinshin Jitsu. So it's, first of all, it's not like working on a meridian like in acupuncture. It's literally called the supervisor energy, so it's talking to the supervisor. But what it used to be before coming to the United States was gods and goddesses, gods on the right, goddesses on the left. And so we have 26 gods and goddesses doing us. And when we misuse what is being made, then things get stuck. And instead of worrying about it, we just ask the gods and goddesses to have a conversation through our hands. So putting right hand on left 11 and left hand on right 13. It's easy to relate to numbers as some kind of reduction, like some kind of mechanical thing. And it's another relationship to numbers where it's a whole world. But in this case, it's a divine, it's a divinity. And just by putting our hands or feet, which might be a little bit difficult, sometimes, but putting the hands and feet just helps that that conversation to happen. And it's such a lovely way to be, to just feel a god and a goddess in this case having a conversation and taking care of anything that might need taken care of, or bringing open an insight or whatever. But what I said this morning, I'm not sure.
Is there a particular emotion for each day related to the organs?
That will come later. Yeah. That would be the disharmony, the sign of disharmony. We're not doing disharmony yet. Anything else?
Do I have acute pain in my sacrum?
Mm-hmm.
Lower spine.
Is it a problem?
No, no, it's just interesting.
Okay.
And today,
I'm just teasing.
It's okay. Today, like wherever I put, whichever god or goddess I put my hands on, my tailbone or sacrum just gets really hot.
Mm-hmm.
So, I guess my question is, are they just saying, ignore your small intestine and I'm going straight to where the action is? Or is it? Small intestine is fine.
Okay, so just hear how we're trying to figure out with our thinking mind what the gods and goddesses are talking about. And it just doesn't make sense to do that.
Okay.
Yeah. It's so all woven all together and so not our business and not our problem. It's just feeling like, and, you know, why bother to think, oh, they're ignoring the small intestine. Maybe the small intestine is exactly supporting then something that, which it probably, but. We can enter the divine conversation in another way, like not through the trying to think it through. It's good. It's good. And then even when something gets more acute for a while as it's releasing, which can happen, there's what we can start to feel and trace is that there's still the it's good. Just like when you're stretching, for example, it can hurt, but it's still like it's good. And then it isn't when we start going, I'm gonna get down, get my chin on my ankle or whatever. We want to do the impossible, and then
Jaya, this mostly what I experienced through Shuchin Jitsu is different energy flows. But last week, wherever I put my hands, I got the same experience or non-experience, whatever you want to call it, in the heart, which didn't seem like an energy flow at all. And I got the same wherever I put my hands.
Yeah.
That seems to go beyond what we've been talking about, a different side of Shinjin Jitsu.
I wouldn't say so. So that leads me to my question for you. What is energy? Not just you, but you. What is energy? What is it? So, anyone? So, be simple. Like, what is energy?
Strength.
It can show us strength, yeah.
The breath of life.
The breath of life. Mm-hmm. What about movement? The wind is moving through the room, through the body. Movement shows that there's energy, or maybe it is energy. What is it? Is energy only the breath of life, which is like not talking about a literal breath, but what empowers that? Or what?
Light
is a sign of energy or a form of energy, or
it can be also heavy and stuff. heavy?
Yes, stuck? Energy can be heavy and stuck.
Or sensations?
It can cause sensations, yeah.
Whatever is beyond energy.
Whatever is beyond energy?
Yeah.
Is energy?
Whatever energy comes out of, which I don't know what it is.
Right. Okay. So you're saying another dimension to the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
In addition to what is energy, where does it come from? What is that that it allows or creates or allows us to perceive energy? So light, movement,
maybe
life.
Maybe it's like movement of non-physical things, like the movement of everything that is not physical, like metaphysical.
Okay. But, but like, they, just by picking this up, which is just a really cool thing that someone put here, just by picking this up, like in terms of physics, it now has more energy. It has potential energy. Potential energy, because it can fall.
But it is energy also.
So I don't know. What am I doing? I'm giving it energy or?
No, it has energy.
It has energy.
Mm-hmm.
In itself, but in terms of it has energy in itself there too.
Yeah.
And then what's different?
Also, it's potential.
Yeah.
Right, in either case.
It has.
You're adding your energy.
I'm adding
energy,
yeah. That's not quite mine. And not mine. Okay. So does something, because it's physical, not have or have energy, or is it not energy because it's physical? Because we can see it. We can see light. We can see this, and physics tells us that it is made of energy. Which they would talk about forces. I'm not saying there's an answer to this question, that I'm just waiting for you to, at all. I just think it's a really fascinating question.
Interesting. I mean, I don't know if it fits to whatever you said now, but energy can just change into another energy. This is from Phoenix wool or something. Like
mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay.
It can just.
Yeah.
It doesn't. It can come out of nowhere. I mean it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean.
Right.
Physics.
According to physics,
yes.
Except
physics.
For the first time that it came out of nowhere. Since that first time in the Big Bang. When it did come out of nowhere, it supposedly can't come out of nowhere, although I think they're also not too sure if it is a thing or isn't a thing. But it could appear to come out of nowhere, but technically, according to some physics, it can't just create itself out of nothing. So it seems to be able to change its qualities.
Maybe it's the way that particles move. Physical and non-physical particles, like all particles, and mass, like, okay, by the physics, mass doesn't change, right? There's always, like, the mass always stays the same, it just changes inside of it, but it doesn't go away or become, so maybe it's just the way that it moves, the way that it acts, and then, like, it's good energy or bad energy or whatever, but,
yeah.
So maybe it's just the way that the particles.
So that's, we have the possibility that there's something that feels like good energy or bad energy, and that can shift. That we could play with anything that seems bad. It could shift to be good. If it's good, it could shift to be bad. And there's the possibility that there's a kind of containment. Except that supposedly, we might have a different story in a few years, but supposedly, originally, it all did come out of nowhere. Did come out of nowhere. That there was not any mass, and then suddenly there was a lot of energy, which still was too hot to become matter. And then finally cooled down enough to make particles that then could become atoms.
But what's the difference, how it can...
Well, just it's just kind of like, by the way, if we're not sure if we're even going to have a conclusion, we might not have a conclusion to this conversation. So if we just keep in mind, we're saying, oh, well, mass is fixed, and it can't come out of nowhere. But according to the same people, it did come out of nowhere originally.
But what is that matrix?
And that might have something to do with our inner experience. It might reflect our inner experience in some way. So it's just like to keep in mind the two apparently opposing statements by our current scientists.
Just what is that matrix then?
Mm-hmm.
The substratum, if you can use that word.
Mm-hmm.
What is the matrix then, and that that's all happening in or within or?
The matrix.
Yeah, the matrix. You know the movie, right? And then just there's the substratum. Right.
So something that allows energy. Like
yeah.
If there's movement or if there's light or if there's force.
Yeah.
Something we could say. Or not, but we could say something allows that.
But can I say one more thing?
Yeah.
I'm just remembering reading that book, Ka, and which is a book about Hindu lore. And the first two words are Prajapati rested. So that just seems somehow relevant at this very moment.
Yeah. The original being rested, is the beginning of
the creation
story.
Is there.
And also in Judeo-Christian tradition, there's the sense of God being at ease and saying it is good. So that's one thing that we can... It's good. So this is kind of related to what Edward was saying, where he often experiences what he would call a flow of energy. He could experience some kind of subtle movement of sensation. Yeah, I can say. But last week, or whenever, 2 weeks ago, on the second retreat, he experienced something that was different. And so he's wondering if it was energy or not. And so one possibility is that there could be very different forms of energy or very different forms of perceiving energy depending on our receptivity. We might feel more sensation or less. Those are two possibilities. Or that there is some place where there isn't movement at all and the energy is only potential, maybe, like potential. This has the potential now to fall, which it didn't have when it was on the ground. And potential, like when we talked about my metaphor for the substratum or whatever, for the underlying stream, the embryonic, nearly love, but more quiet.
Would you describe that as the formless?
What I remember of your description of your experience, it didn't sound formless. There was some form, but it was very quiet. So it would be like there was form with this original being in the Hindu or in the Indian spiritual tradition, but that original being was at rest in the beginning. And it could be another possibility, like resting so deeply that everything is possible. Like feeling the power that by itself becomes available. So like becomes available somehow. By resting, so feeling what some people talk about as creative rest. And we've been talking about doing more by doing less. Not trying to do as much as I can without going quite too far, but rather resting and allowing that that one thing that needed to be done to happen in that graceful way. So restful action.
And Jinshin Jitsu can bring that about through grace.
Okay. So, yeah, grace is a good word for that, because it's really important for us to keep remembering. And this is one thing I really wanted to explore today. So thank you again for opening the next chapter of the talk, Edward. When we come to spiritual practice, spiritual path, because we have a problem, it's easy to really get the sense that we've got to recreate ourselves or make something happen or get something that we didn't have so that that will never happen again. And when we have a little bit more room for, it is good, even though my leg is hurting, it is good. Even though what I wanted didn't come today, this is good. It's more available to notice that we're not getting anything. So we, sometime in the last few weeks, we had the Krishnamurti line about life is not about accumulating, it's not about piling up stuff. It's not a school where we accumulate knowledge and technique. It's a living thing, so to say. So now that we're in the, what I made to be the receiving week, it's not that there's any particular reason that this had to be the receiving week, other than we had 2 weeks, and in Jinshin there's the letting go and the out-breath first to make space to receive. So what is receiving if it's not getting something? What is it to receive if it's not accumulating, if it's not accumulation or getting?
Sorry, you say allowing.
Allowing, mm-hmm.
Not getting things, but allowing everything.
But I'm allowing things to come, and then I have them. That could be a way of, I'm allowing myself to receive in a way of, it could be, I'm allowing myself to take all of the desserts from the tray.
Or you're allowing, to see them and smell them,
Yeah. No, I agree. It's a good way to start. Thank you. Allowing, we could say that instead of making something, allowing myself to be in contact with what's already here.
You said about the grace, allowing just.
Right, but then grace, I use the word and I love the word, but what does it actually mean? So partly what it means is that we don't have to make it happen. It happens to us, because it's already here. And so receiving what's already here, our receptivity somehow opens to, I think the word allowing is really good, because it's not that we're keeping everything out and not actually receiving. We are in exchange with each other. There is an exchange of energy that's going back and forth, not just with each other, but with everything. So it's not keeping it all out, because we're not supposed to accumulate anything. It's not a new rule. So anyone else? What is receiving that, if it isn't accumulating? Do you know the word accumulating? Is that?
No, it's not.
Accumulating would be piling up stuff, which could be not only things that we can see. It could be piling up knowledge and technique. So, but what it is relating to thing as thing with a sense of ownership. That's the main thing about accumulation, which is kind of answering the question.
So could receiving be when it's in the flow, so it doesn't accumulate?
Good. So that's what Lisa's saying is also what Jigme Trungpa says about generosity that we talked about a couple days ago a little bit. For him, it is the spiritual practice, generosity. And what he says is really supportive of the Jinshin experience as well, in that we get into giving, we get into the flow, and the flow is giving. But it's like literally giving. Not like... And that he says, in the giving, of course, there's some receiving that happens, but the receiving happens by the way, and already, it's not like I'm giving in order to then receive. The two don't get equal, like time on television or whatever. The involvement or dedication or interest or energy or attention or love is with giving. Where it is good is with the giving, actually. Even though we have a lot of need to learn how to receive, and it is part of the same. But we get into giving, we fall in love with giving, and by the way, receiving happens, but we're already giving again. So that's one other good reason to use the word flow, for it is good. So it's not accumulating because I don't keep it for myself. It's not for me. It might stay available for me if it's a knowledge, like here, the way you've been absorbing by being immersed in a Jinshin environment, whether you particularly wanted to or not, you have been. So there are certain things that have come across, whether you consciously heard it said or saw it written or not, that may now be available when you feel relaxed and at rest and it is good and hates the outer knee, yes, or whatever. And so that's a game to play, by the way, is just noticing where you feel like putting your hands. And that, because I didn't mention it in the hall or whatever, you kind of, why don't... So someone just today was saying, she said something, and I said, oh, your outer wrist. And she said, oh, that's funny, because I've been doing that a lot. I've been really, why am I doing that? But her attitude was like, why am I doing that? Like, as if she's so stupid to be wanting to hold her outer wrist. That was her attitude to herself. And it was the perfect, in terms of my understanding of Jinshin, it was a perfect match for her. And so it's getting through that sticky part of not trusting when Kuan Yin is sleeping and moving the pillow and putting your hand on your outer wrist. That if we receive it as grace, like, ah, it is good. We can be at creative rest.
Is it something that's none of our business?
What?
Receptivity or receiving without accumulation in terms of us not making it anything with our mind. It's something that...
You mean when something comes,
yeah,
not making it into a thing, not believing the way the mind makes it into a thing,
yeah,
that makes me now better or worse, more special or less special, etc. And even when the mind does that, because it will, we laugh and go, ah, it is good. Yeah, good.
That's just thinking about it, how in yoga, the Kapalabhati breath, the shining skull breath, you know, you're asked to exhale and then the inhale is passive. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I was just thinking about that when you were talking, and then realized it's like at the end of each of those breaths, it's like it's too much.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not like the next one comes because there's not enough. It comes because there's too much. You
mm-hmm.
know, so
mm-hmm.
so you exhale and then the inhale comes. And it's too much, so you have to.
Mm.
You know.
Good. Yeah. Good. Exactly. So that's the next chapter of the talk. Is the too much. So one, in terms of what Katori and Kylie have just said, first, if we stay with what Kylie was saying, where there is a tendency that we have as human beings to want things to be things that we can have for us to try to fill our sense of lack, even though it never fills the sense of lack. And we keep letting go and uncovering more and more layers of subtle making something into a thing to try to make me feel like, okay, I'm okay, now I'm okay. Am I okay? And it's never quite working. And so I'm often or even always interested in a reversal of this interest in spiritual path because we have a problem, and coming back around to, so not even, oh, because I have this problem with having so much belief in lack or so much coming from a place of lack. I've got to do something about it. I've got to make myself believe in enoughness or feel the enoughness more often or whatever. And it gets very quantitative, like wanting to count the number of times that I could feel the enoughness, etc., and for how long. And another way is when we just notice how often, when there's even a little bit of the it is good, being a little bit at rest, creative rest, deep rest, experiences are too much. And instead of that being a problem, it can just show us a way deeper to where it isn't too much. So experience is too much for the small self. Way, way, way too much. And we usually don't notice it because we're running away from that so fast. We're running away from how it's too much and we can't handle it. And so when we meet any experience, whether it's just what we talked about last time, those experiences where there's openness and softening and gentleness and melting and meeting, and then it's too much, we can really feel like, where is it too much for? What is it too much for?
Could you say something in what sense it would feel like being too much? Like an expression of too muchness?
An expression of too much could be like the thinking starts to go wild or shut down. So focus on something and go, or space out, distraction, or kind of be gone. It could be emotional, like a feeling of too much energy that I don't know even what it is, but it's too strong, so I can't. But quite often it comes as a sentence in the mind, it's too much for me, or it's too much.
Can that be related to feeling that if there's something kind of good which is too much, kind of feeling that I need to share it with someone, it's not just enough that I feel it?
Yeah, that's another manifestation. And that's really interesting when we're speaking of also generosity. So there's the where I can't stay with it because it's too good, and I compulsively have to show you the beautiful bird or give away something, which is different from getting in the flow of the generosity that is the nature of things, which is too much. And so the experience, especially of too much, very good, like too good, too beautiful, too quiet, too still, too pleasant, too joyful or too clear, too rich, etc. what we talked about a couple of days ago about giving up our seat for joy is talking about the same thing. So I was saying, I was suggesting a sense of staying in our seat, so staying in connection to it is good, or staying into connection to deep okayness, or staying into connection to the underlying stream, the confidence that the deep nature of things has a harmony. Even if there's some call for action in our daily life and world. And so that would be like the woman on the bus who has dark skin who doesn't get up for the white guy. Like, we stay in our seat because it is good. And when it is joy that is coming, and it's not just feeling relief and confirmation because I'm getting what I planned and expected and wanted, or what signifies to me, okay, it's okay. Although, can also work even that way. So let's just say, even when I get what I want, and it makes me happy, if we can feel how, what is, or feel into what is the happiness, why? And that's another question regarding what is energy, like, where is this happy energy suddenly coming from? It doesn't always come. I can get what I want and I'm in such a bad mood that I... So what is actually functioning? So we could leave that to explore. But there could be a way, if I don't believe the story and I just accept the joy, and I don't say this joy requires that chocolate or whatever, or that person or whatever, but this joy is what I belong to. Thanks for slipping in the back door. Or especially when joy just comes and we don't know why, it's just come. The reason I was suggesting to give up our seat for joy, in contrast to the difficult, not giving up our seat for the difficult, giving up our seat for the joy. So not giving up our seat and putting chocolate or the person in the seat, the object, the stimulant or whatever, the joy, which again, what is joy? We can feel that fundamental difference in the quality of the difficult and the joy. When we take it out of the cycle of ups and downs, of right and wrong, good and bad, but we just accept that openness that allowed something to flash into our experience, our mind state. So joy is here. And it would, if you just feel like you're on a bus and someone gets on the bus, and not because they're elderly or crippled or pregnant or whatever, not because of any reason, you just give up your seat. Please sit down. Or in your house, oh please. So there's a couple of funny examples of that that I want to share by the way here. One was when Gautam Buddha had just gotten enlightened and got convinced by God or goddess that even though hardly anyone was going to understand anything that he was talking about his experience, it was still worth, for those few who had little dust in their eyes, it was still worth trying anyway to teach. And so he started walking, and he met the people that he used to meditate with before getting enlightened. And they saw him coming, from a distance, and they made a plan of how they were going to, we would say, dis him. Now we would say, like, disrespect him. We're not going to get up, and we're not going to all the things that the monks used to do at that time to show respect. We're not going to do those things. But when he actually got right up to them, they did all of those things. Because there was some something else going on. And just recently I read an example from the Christian tradition that I really like. It's really curious and a little bit grotesque as well. So if you don't mind my Monty Python humor. It's not too bad, don't worry.
I've never heard those in the same sentence, Christian and Monty Python.
Oh, they do so many Christian...
Well, that's true. Yeah. They do. Not only think of it.
Things. So in this case, they could do a good job of this one. They probably did the scene, in fact, but the opposite of what I'm going to say. So Jesus was tortured in various ways, and one of the ways was having nails through his, actually the wrists, probably not the hands, but anyway, hands is what people say. And he was also injured in the side. And he first appeared to a woman or women, and then he appeared to some of his men followers in a closed room. One of them wasn't there, Thomas wasn't there. One of the Thomases wasn't there. And when Thomas heard about this vision that the others had seen Jesus after he died walking around, showing, and with his wounds, talking, Thomas was like as if really pissed off. Maybe he was jealous that he wasn't there, like for the second sighting or whatever. Or who knows, but you could feel the kind of, let's say, involuntary emotion that happened to him, to Thomas, when he said, I'm not going to believe anything until I not just see the guy, but put my fingers in the wounds. So I'm sure many of you have heard the story, but it's a famous. Into the wounds. I need to actually touch the wounds to believe it. I'm not going to believe it just by seeing it, since he didn't show me. Since he came when I wasn't here. I'm not going to believe it until not only do I see, but I put my, until I touch the wounds. And so then I think it's like a week later in this, maybe the same room, but anyway, in a room. And the guys are there and Thomas is also there. And Jesus says to him, so you wanted to see my wounds, right? You wanted to touch my wounds, right? So here I am. And because there have been so many paintings of Thomas putting his finger into the wound, we assume that that's what happened. But actually in the text, it didn't happen that way, apparently. Apparently there's actually not any room for that. And so it was another one of those moments where Thomas, just by meeting Jesus, and also Jesus saying to him, so you wanted to touch my wound, so come on, come on. Then Thomas's response was, my Lord and my God. Which I find is really, now maybe it's been enough years away from enforced religious education that I could feel the another kind of involuntary emotion of just being in awe and maybe some kind of surrender or acceptance or finding a deeper confidence, like, oh, I don't have to go so far because something else happened, some kind of, he was like his breath taken away. And he just immediately said, my Lord and my God, and that was that. So those are kind of, let's say, kind of extreme examples of giving up our seat in meeting an actual human being, okay? But mostly what I'm talking about is the states of mind where they kind of take our breath away, which is another symptom of too much for me, too much for small me. And it takes away the breath, it takes away the story, it takes away the plan, it takes away the revenge or whatever, the kind of standing my ground. And it kind of, it's as if we just were left with that open mouth, like an open center, like instead of being a something in the middle of my experience, I'm an open space in the middle of experience. Susan Murphy, this Zen ecologist that I mentioned a couple days ago, talks about waking up to no self as being whole with the world. So waking up to our small and big experiences of finding that we don't have to be there standing our ground. And that in fact we're not. And that isn't some kind of alienation or separation or being stuck somewhere, but it's being whole with our world, whole with the whole world. So last time, a couple days ago, we talked, there were words like melting and softening and opening. And I was just encouraging us to leave that much more room for that. Even a little softening, a little opening, a little melting, a little gentleness. It's so good. It's not just sort of okayness. It's like Trungpa was saying, it's incredibly rich. It's showing off its richness. It's constantly radiating its richness. So I'd like to end with a reflection that has been popping up for me about dream. Partly because things get surreal on retreat and things get surreal in nature, and here we're in nature and on retreat. And so we talked about that, how things can seem surreal when we're fully meeting the light on the ground, and then a memory comes in that's really vivid and we just meet it and then it's gone, and then we fully meet our foot on the ground, and then another completely seemingly random memory comes, but probably not random. Probably somehow resonating with that same moment, that same mind state. It seems to me. And we talked this morning about experiencing me asleep, experiencing myself asleep, being awake to my asleepness. And also Keturah's experience of hand on body, and then body on hand, and then not really any body left. And it was disorienting rather than hooray in that moment. And I mentioned this disorientation, this reorientation of what is home or what is real. Or what am I? What is me? What is mine? There's a Zen koan where someone asks what to do with the difficult, and there's a one-word answer, which is welcome. And it's not only that problem-oriented thing where, like, okay, we're supposed to welcome the difficult, but in the experience of, okay, what if I welcome the difficult, since I tried keeping it out and it didn't work? What if I just live it fully, face it fully? There's a way that we find ourselves welcome, that we end up being welcomed. It's kind of like the hand on the leg, leg on the hand, and then there's no ground left. The disorientation. Another experience of body that's not, there's no really, is that my hand? Is that a hand? Is that, what is it? Is it just energy? What is energy? And so the possibility that those subtle, deep experiences are what is real. And so even though it feels like we go and visit those far out places and then we come back to reality, what if we're just spending a long vacation with seeming solidity and occasionally visiting home of nothing solid and everything surreal? So I was reflecting with this as surreal as the new real, or as the real real, whatever. And it's important to remember Chogyam Trungpa's talking about the Vajra quality as being so hard as well and so down to earth. So it's not like, oh, I have no body, so it doesn't matter what I do. But experiencing this body in such a different way that we're totally disoriented, that it seems as if we don't have a body in that moment. But there's also exactly no escaping anywhere. And any sort of movement for any kind of ground already makes a map. It makes some kind of false sense of security that we know is false from the very beginning. We can feel that it needs pressure to stay. And we start to realize that we could rest that deeply without any story. We could be that, there could be that much welcome. Inter-welcome. And so, what is it in a dream when we think of a dream as having a good sense to it? So not just a good dream where something exciting happened that we think means that we're special, like we had a visitation of Jesus or whatever. But what could make any dream, like any situation in a dream? So we're talking about the dreams that happen, that seem to happen when we're asleep for a moment. What brings a sense of good quality even to a dream that could be called a nightmare? But what could make a nightmare even a good dream, have a good sense?
While we're dreaming it or after?
Either one, but I'm thinking while. If you remember a dream now or later where it felt good, but when you actually think of the story, like, why was that good? Or it was terrible and then there was some shift and it wasn't anymore. Yeah? So just feeling what could that be, or what could those things be, those qualities or that quality. And then bringing that quality to this, the new real, the surreal waking dream. So maybe if I just have, there'll be a help if there's a little bit more explanation by way of a story. One of my teachers, Papaji, whose name was Punjaji, but we called him Papaji, because his grandkids called him Papaji. Already, like, you can feel the surrealism, the surreal real. And he put a lot of effort and energy into trying to find a teacher that could show him God. He was really interested in seeing God. That's what he wanted most, was to see God. That's what he thought was going to end the whole problem of life for him, to see God. And he would go around to all the famous teachers, and he was in the army, so sometimes he would go into a temple and not even take off his boots. He would just walk into the temple, straight up to the teacher, and, "Can you show me God?" And of course they would say, "Well, you see, you need to first be initiated and first take off your shoes." And he would like, "Can you show me God right now?" And they would be like, "Well, not exactly." And he would leave. So there's a lot of other really good, interesting stories in there. But finally he met his teacher through a really surreal way. But you can read the book. And he was with his teacher as much as he could be. And he'd left everything to be with his teacher. That was all. That was better than seeing God, because he saw God many times and that still wasn't quite doing it for him. But being with his teacher was good. And he was walking with his teacher and one other guy. So this is that other guy that's always there that you wish he wasn't there. Like, the dream is you're walking with your teacher and it's just you and your teacher, you know, and you're just like, "Oh yeah, this is the good dream." You know? So that's that kind of good dream, where the visitation or whatever. And it's somehow, the surreal real is never quite like that, almost never. And even when it is, it's not what you expected. So you're alone with your teacher and it's not what you dreamed of. Or it is, but it's real in that surreal way. So, but in this case, it was the usual surreal, where there's that guy there who's just the perfect person to kind of put a screw into your well-oiled machine of your dream. Bless him. Really. Thank God for that guy. Of course, that guy, that woman, that whatever, dog, that storm, that whatever, that's more or less almost always on call. So they were walking along, and that guy said to my teacher's teacher, "You know, Punjiji has a family, and his family is in what is about to turn into Pakistan. And that they're all going to get killed, and he's not doing anything about it. What do you think about that?" And it was true. It wasn't just, there's that guy that tells something that's not true that also brings the good dream to a crashing end. In this case, it was the other guy was revealing an honest truth. And so then all eyes turn to Papaji, Punjiji. "Oh, really?" And so Papaji said, "Yes, but life is a dream, and I'm going to stay with you for the rest of my life." And of course, Punjiji's teacher said, "If life is a dream, what are you afraid of?" And Punjiji was pretty quick, and so that was all that needed to be said, touching the feet of his teacher and leaving forever. Never saw him again. Went to get his family out of Pakistan. And again, so many surreal stories about that, but again, it's in the book. So, especially in our waking dream, welcome. So let's end quietly.
Was that surreal? Unreal.
That's the new real. Or the old real, the real real. Thank you for being here.